Hey everybody, quick one before today's podcast episode where I go through my recent 100 mile race in Nevada. So the training, nutrition, everything I did in the lead up to that event to run 100 miles and everything I learned during the event. I didn't learn that much during the event. Like, I learned that 100 miles is fucking long. That's really long. But yeah, I get into that more in today's episode. I swear there's more to it than that. I talk a little bit around the mindset side, comparing it to some of the things I've done in the past. So yeah, hopefully it's an interesting episode. But today's episode advertisement sponsor, it's not really sponsor, there's no sponsor for this episode. I suppose sponsored by the Rewire Your Mindset Seminar. Yeah, this episode is sponsored by the Rewire Your Mindset Seminar in Cork. So my next Rewire Your Mindset Seminar is on in the Clayton Hotel in Laps Quay, Central Cork, on Saturday the 18th of April. So from 9:30 to 4:30, the doors will be open from 9 a.m. as well. And this is my Rewire Your Mindset seminar. So if you've read my book, Rewire Your Mindset, the seminar is effectively the book on steroids. It's just a massive upswing and building on some of the lessons from that book. But it is... They're not connected. As in, you could definitely read the book and it will set you up perfectly for the day, but you could also come in completely fresh. Assuming that you have followed the podcast or you're listening to the podcast and enjoy the mindset side of stuff, it could potentially be very beneficial. So I've actually changed it. Some of the things I put on the website about building confidence, goal setting, dealing with negative people, feeling the fear and doing it anyways, they're all topics that I am covering on the day, but I have made some changes to recent seminars because it's always adapting, it's always tweaking and changing. So I have a few more things in store for Cork on the 18th. So if you're looking to rewire your mindset, if you're struggling with hitting any goal, a fitness goal in your personal life, in your work life, if you're struggling with confidence, if you're struggling to just find direction, and if you're feeling lost in any of those areas, or you have an issue with self-sabotage where you get going and you're able to get from zero to one, but you just can't hit your end goal, then this is definitely the day for you. My goal for everybody attending is that you get exactly what you need out of it. You'll have a blueprint leaving on the day on what you need to go and do in order to hit any end goal for yourself. So that's the plan. That has been the feedback from people who have attended the seminars in Galway and Dublin so far. And this is my first one in Cork. So I'm looking forward to... Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting all the Cork people and people from all over, because I know people are coming from all over. So that is the 18th of... Fuck, what date? 18th of April, 9:30 to 4:30. You can get your tickets in the description. I'll link it in the description below, or you can go on to briankeyfitness.com/rewireyourmindsetseminar and you can get your tickets on there. And I'll see you all on the 18th. Enjoy today's episode. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, here to help you build and rewire your fitness mindset. Today's episode is a solo podcast talking about my first 100 mile race that I finished and completed last week in Nevada. So I'm recording this mid jet lag. So I got home a couple of days ago. I'm recording this on Monday the 24th. I'm going to release it next Monday. And I still have that jet lag. So I'm kind of hoping everything comes in a coherent thought as it normally does. Because I had a cup of coffee and I'm like, it did nothing. I'm like, caffeine plus jet lag equals like barely baseline normal. So today's episode, I'm going to recap while it's fresh my recent 100 mile race. So the Jackpot 100 in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I hadn't originally planned on recording an episode about this, just because this was something that I kind of set for myself as a personal goal, just to give me something to train for, which I know sounds mental when you're like, yeah, let's do a 100 mile race because we need something to train for, but it's completely relative. And I am going to record this episode talking through it because of the amount of feedback that I got on social media, Instagram in particular, people asking me about my experience, what I did for the preparation for the event, what the actual event in the entire 100 miles was like, and maybe some of the mindset tips that I got alongside it. So I'm going to talk kind of just around the topic of what I did in the lead up to this event, the actual event, and then kind of the mindset around it, alongside some questions that came in today through my 10 question Q&A on Instagram. There was a few questions that were specific to this 100 mile race that I said I would save for the podcast. So just to give a little bit of recap for anyone that is unfamiliar with the race that I just did, the 100 mile race Jackpot 100 is a 100 mile race, so a non-stop race for 100 miles. And how it works is it was a 2.5 mile loop in a kind of a desert area in Nevada. So it was a 2.5 mile loop 40 times for 100 miles. And it took me 26 and a half hours just straight through from start to finish to get it complete. And I ended up finishing way higher than I had planned. When I finished and got over the finish line after 26 and a half hours, I was told I was in the top 10 out of 35 people. And then when I looked back on the leaderboard the following day, it said 11th out of 38 people. So I have no idea what position I finished in, whether it was 10th or 11th, which wasn't a goal going out there. The goal was, one, to complete the 100-mile race. And the second goal was to potentially try and do it in 24 hours. But as I was running, I realized that just wasn't going happen. The last 20 miles were quite character building, which I'll get on to a little bit in today's episode. So I'm going to jump around from my actual prep and food and training in the lead up to this event, because this has been something that's been coming up recently on the podcast and on Instagram about how I actually prepare for endurance events, ultramarathons in particular, because I don't take a very traditional approach. I've been very vocal on this podcast in the past about my hatred for running. And because of that, I tend to do a lot of high quality runs at a faster speed than a lot of what are called junk miles. So just smashing out and hammering out miles and getting 100 miles and 200 mile weeks to try and prepare for ultramarathons, which is something that a lot of my ultramarathon friends do. And there's nothing wrong with that system. If you enjoy running, that's probably a good way to do it. But I have a very much a minimum effective dose when it comes to my training and running, and how can I get the most out of my sessions with the least amount of time on my feet. Also, one of the kind of disadvantages that I have is, as someone that's quite a bigger ultramarathon runner, I'm 85 kilos, 5'8", like built like a hobbit, like not built for ultramarathons, and I can't spend 100 miles, 150 miles of running every week because my body just breaks down. My knees, my ankles, everything just can't take that kind of poundage. So in the lead up to this event, I actually very rarely went over the 80 to 100 kilometers per week. And more often than not, it was less than that. So what I would do for my training split in the lead up to this 100-mile race, and again, everything I'm talking about in today's episode is what I did, what I do, and not necessarily what I recommend. What I recommend is very similar to people who are prepping for body composition, trying to lose weight, trying to lose body fat, trying to build muscle. I'm like, don't do what I do. Do what's the best for you and do what has the most scientifically backed approach that you should trial and test first and then make adjustments to that course. I have a long training history. I've got nearly an 18-year training history lifting weights, been qualified as a nutritionist or sports nutritionist and personal trainer for nearly 10 years. Like, I have a lot of background in it, so I can play around with different training strategies and different nutritional strategies and protocols and not get the negative effects that somebody else might get. So just to preface this is what I did and what I do, as opposed to what I recommend people do. By all means, if there's stuff here you want to try and experiment with, then by all means go and do that, but just so that we're clear from the offset, this isn't my recommendation for a 100-mile training program or even for a marathon, because a lot of people listening to this will hopefully have a goal. Whether it is, and if you're listening to this, you've got some goal you're working towards, whether it's a body compositional goal, wanting to look better, wanting to build your mental toughness, you know, run a 5K, a 10K, a half marathon, a full marathon, whatever it is, goals are relative. And hopefully today's podcast will talk you through and make you question some of your goal setting principles. And one of the strategies that I use that I'll talk about later for my mindset to try and get through a 100-mile race, and I've spoken about this in previous podcasts, so if you're a new listener, it'll be completely new. If you've been a long time listener, you may be familiar with this, is that I always try and consume information or follow people in the lead up to an event who are doing things that are more extreme than I'm doing. So for example, when I was running this 100-mile race, I listened to about 18 hours of Cameron Haynes, who is an ultramarathon runner, on the Joe Rogan podcast. So I downloaded 7 or 8 episodes of Cameron Haynes, and he runs 200-mile races. And when I was listening to his interviews on Joe Rogan, I was like, all right, fuck it. He does 200 miles. I can do 100 miles. It's fine. And that approach makes my goal seem less extreme and more doable in the short term. You know, that was something that I did when I was preparing for the Arctic. I remember when Ross Edgley, who's been on this podcast a couple of times, he was swimming around Great Britain. And I remember thinking to myself, well, fuck it, if Ross can swim around Great Britain, I can run through the Arctic. You know, and I would do the same thing with Marcus Smith, who's been on this podcast several times. When Marcus was doing these crazy ultra marathons and crazy cycles, I'm like, fuck it, I can go do and run my 20 kilometers today. So I was using other people as motivation and inspiration to get my training session done. And in this context, I was using it at the actual event to make the 100 miles seem shorter. So you have to use, in my opinion, for me anyway, the tools and techniques that are going to help you get over the finish line. So what I'm kind of hoping from today's episode, and you may use this, you may not, if you're prepping for a 5K or a 10K or a half marathon or a full marathon, listening to my preparation for a 100 mile race might be the thing that makes the marathon seem smaller, or not necessarily smaller, makes it seem more doable. And that's my approach. So that's just kind of my little inside tip that I use, because it makes any goal that I set for myself seem more achievable, because I'm like, well, these other people are doing these fucking crazy things, I can do this. So that's just kind of my mindset coming into it, and hopefully this might be useful in that case, or as a resource for the future when you set an event, a 5K, a 10K, half marathon or full marathon. But when it comes to my preparation for this, I spoke a little bit about my training and how my split went. It wasn't ideal. Like, when you are training for an ultra marathon or an ultra endurance event, like everything in life, to be completely honest, I still work with people in my BKF online program, my GA Lean Body program. Like, there's going to be weeks and there's going to be months when things just don't go to plan. Life gets in the way, you get sick, you have a opportunity at work you need to take, you have family commitments, like life will get in the way, and it's never going to be ideal conditions. And somebody asked me about 2 weeks before I flew out to Nevada, flew out to Vegas, what my preparation was like for the event. They're like, oh, you must have smashed your, you know, 100 mile training prep. I'm like, no, I was like, I fucking missed nearly a month over Christmas. I got the vomiting bug over Christmas. So as I was tapering up, which would have been my highest end, I planned on getting up to a marathon on a Monday and then 10 kilometer maintenance runs. That completely went by the wayside because I got sick. And the same thing happened when I was prepping for the Arctic, you know, running 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle. And the same thing happened when I was running Marathon des Sables, six back-to-back marathons in the Sahara. You're never going to have ideal circumstances. Life will get in the way, you'll get sick, something will happen. And you just kind of have to make the best of it and get along with it. So I just adjusted my training week. And the longest run I did to prepare for the 100 miles was a 30-kilometer run. Now, just to add on this, because I said that to a couple of people, and I need to preface with this, having ran a 100 mile race, and last year having ran through the Arctic, and the year before having ran through the Sahara, I had a good baseline of fitness and running condition that even just doing maintenance runs was enough to get me through. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend prepping for a 100 mile race or any race with, you know, a 30 kilometer run, or someone prepping for a marathon to only do a 10 kilometer run. You may need to go more than that, but this is what I did for this particular preparation. So I didn't go over 30 kilometers. That was the longest run I did. And I did mostly maintenance runs of 10 kilometers, meaning that at the end of my workouts, I would do my hypertrophy workout, which would take me about 45 minutes to an hour, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then I was doing a long run on a Monday. So normally a 20 kilometer run on a Monday at the end of my workout, and a 10 kilometer run on a Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. So I actually wasn't covering that much mileage, but I was doing fast 10 kilometers. So I was trying to break that 45 minute mark on a 10 kilometer run. Most of it was on a treadmill. So 1.5 incline on the treadmill, and I was adjusting the speed upwards, and I was trying to do them fast. And there's a really good book that I recommend for people who are runners or are getting on a running journey or starting a running journey where you're afraid of the risk of injury from doing too many miles. And that's Unbreakable Runner. And I think it's Brian McKenzie who wrote that book. I think there's two people who wrote it, but I think he's the main author on that book. And he talks a lot about CrossFit endurance. Now, there's parts of that book that you can kind of take a pinch of salt with, but the idea is that you do high quality training that is going to support your runs. And that's what I did. My hypertrophy-based workouts were mostly circuit-based, so they were high intensity. I was doing a lot of body weight, a lot of pull-ups, a lot of push-ups, a lot of TRX, a lot of Swiss ball work on my core, and I was putting them all into a circuit. And then I was doing my runs after, and they were high quality, fast runs. And the reason I did that was because my body breaks down, as I mentioned earlier, after a certain point. If I go too high volume and start smashing out junk miles, you know, miles that don't really give you any benefit, you're just doing them because they mentally feel better, my body breaks down. And I had the advantage coming into this 100-mile race that I knew I could cover the distance, or I was at least 80% sure I could cover the distance, because I had covered, you know, the Arctic. I had done the Sahara beforehand, which in my mind were, and even on reflection, were still more difficult than the 100-mile race. And I knew I was going to be able to cover the distance, but if I got injured, that would cause another whole host of problems that I needed to avoid. So something I spoke about on the Arctic episode, of which I'll link in the show notes, I think it's 213, that I always do a cost-benefit analysis before I do any run. I do the same thing in my business. I do the same thing in life in general, is I'll weigh up the pros and cons, or I weigh up the cost and the benefit and ask what the downside of situations are. What are the things that could potentially kill me here? So kill me in this, in the case of the Arctic, was what could actually physically kill me. But in the case of the 100-mile race, is what could stop me finishing? And the things that could stop me finishing were getting an injury. I'm like, if I get a bad injury beforehand, that's going to affect me as my body starts to tire, you know, particularly in the latter half of a 100-mile race. After that, then it was going to be covering the distance. I'm like, what happens if I time out? You know, I had 31 hours to complete the 100 miles. If I wasn't moving at a specific pace, I wasn't going to make that cutoff time. So I had to condition my body to be able to do a certain speed or run a certain speed. So they were the kind of two things that I identified up front. And as a result of that, I just trained my body to either, one, not get injured. So by not doing a load of junk miles and wasted runs and doing quality focused training and quality focused runs, that helped me. And then combining that with making my body adaptive to running on minimal fuel. So I got very fortunate on, and I'll talk about the actual race shortly, but one of the things that I've done, and I spoke about this in last week's podcast, actually in question two, where somebody asked me about evidence-based versus a experience-based, and why I don't use carbohydrates post-workout after my runs. And I spoke about fat adaption and metabolic flexibility, basically just to summarize it, meaning that you're metabolically flexible, that you can run off fat or carbohydrate. And not everybody is. Most people by default are carbohydrate based. So glucose, glycogen, carbohydrate fuel based, meaning that to run off fat, your body isn't used to doing it. So you can't flick that switch and tap into either body fat stores or dietary fat and utilize it for fuel. Whereas I've spent the last 12 or 18 months conditioning my body to become a lot more fat adapted. And the way I did that, and one of the ways I did that, was I do all my workouts fasted. So I'll sip on branched-chain amino acids before I train, and I'll take a little bit of a pre-workout that I've made myself, which is normally a combination of citrulline malate, beta-alanine, and caffeine, or a combination of, you know, several other ingredients like L-carnitine or green tea extract mixed in with that. And I'll take that before I train, and then I'll do my entire workout, which could be a 3 or 4 hour workout based on the day, and I'll do all of that fasted. And what that does is it makes me a lot more metabolically flexible and gets my body used to training in a fasted state, which was came in very useful because at mile 15, I had a little bit of stomach issues, which I'll get onto later, meaning that I couldn't eat for quite a long period of time. And what would have taken somebody else out, a more glucose, glycogen, carbohydrate-based athlete who needs the fuel to run and move, I didn't. So I got lucky in that sense that I had made myself fat adapted, that I could run for, I think it was nearly 20 miles without any food. I think from mile 20 to mile 45, I just ran it without food because I couldn't stomach anything. And that was an advantage of training the way that I trained in the lead up to it. So my preparation was, that was pretty much it in a nutshell. That was my training. I kept all my hypertrophy work. I kept my nutrition, fasted training sessions, and then mostly plant-based with a slight increase in meat for this actual event, where when I prepped for the Arctic last year and I prepped for Marathon des Sables the year before, I was trying to reduce some of my size and trying to bring down some of my muscle. The theory being that if I could drop 2 kilos of body weight or drop 2 kilos of muscle, I could put on 2 more kilos in my back, because those races are self-sufficient, meaning you carry all your food and everything on your back. Whereas in the 100-mile race, I just had a small ultra bag with some gels in it, and I actually didn't have to lug around 10, 12, 13 kilos on my back as I was running. So because of that, I didn't actually have to drop any weight for this race. So I kept my meat a little bit higher. I was eating more steak, more salmon, a little bit of chicken, on a mostly plant-based diet, which is something I've been following for years. So that was my prep, that was my food, that was my training in the lead up to the event, which brings me on to the actual 100-mile event, the Jackpot 100 in Vegas. So the Jackpot 100, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, is a 2.5-mile loop for 100 miles in Vegas, in Nevada, about 40 minutes from Las Vegas. So I flew over to Vegas for the week. I brought my mum with me and I brought my daughter with me. And one of the reasons for that was I've been trying to combine some of the fitness excursions that I do and bring my daughter and mum with me when I can. And because there's certain events that, and I actually have signed up for another event, which I'm really excited about, I'll talk about at the end of today's podcast. There's certain events that I can't bring my family with me. Things like the Sahara, the Arctic, they're too dangerous. I'm going up Kilimanjaro next year as well. I'm taking a group up Kilimanjaro in February of next year. And there's certain things, and similar to the event I'm signed up for November, which I'll talk about at the end of the episode, I can't bring my family with me. But this was one of the events that fell in a good location, and I was fortunate enough to be able to bring my mom and daughter out with me on the day. So because of 100 miles, I knew I was going to be running for between 24 and 28 hours. I knew it was going to be somewhere between that, especially as I saw the course in the 2.5-mile loop, which was pretty a straightforward loop, a little bit of an incline at times. It got hot at times as well, between 20 and 30 degrees, but nothing unbearable. February in Vegas and February in Nevada isn't that bad in terms of heat compared to what it is in the summer. And I brought my mum and daughter over because that helps. As someone that has done other events in the past where you can't bring family members, it helps a lot if you can bring support from loved ones with you to an event. So if you ever sign up to a marathon or an Ironman or a half marathon or a 5K or a 10K, that's a little thing that I would add and bring with you, because it definitely helps with motivation as you're pushing through. And also, I always, when I sign up to these events, I always wanted my daughter to see these worlds, effectively, that there's people out there pushing themselves physically. And she saw people like just doing crazy shit on a 2.5-mile loop, you know, trying to get through it. And I think that is going to have a positive impact. Again, you never know, because you don't know how it's going to hit a 4-year-old. But I think it's going to have a positive impact. And also seeing me doing it and out there physically running, because I know she was running with me at one stage. We did the last 400 meters of one of the laps, she ran it with me. And I think that's a good thing to have. So anyone that has kids that's listening to this podcast, I would advise considering bringing your children with you to these events. Because it's planting seeds. Like they're seeing things that they wouldn't be exposed to otherwise, and you never know what kind of seeds that's going to plant going forward. But anyways, the 100-mile event, as I mentioned, it's a loop. So a 2.5-mile loop. So I stole a trick to try and get through this 100 miles that I took from Marcus Smith, who's been on this podcast twice. And Marcus was on, I think he's been on the podcast 3 times now, actually. Marcus was talking about the 30 marathons in 30 days, where he ran 30 marathons in 30 days in Dubai. And the way that he got through that was he didn't focus on 30 marathons in 30 days. He focused on running one marathon 30 times. And that's literally what I thought about with the 2.5-mile loop. I'm like, I'm not running 2.5 miles for 100 miles. I'm running 2.5 miles 40 times. And that made it a lot easier to chunk down and break down. And then I broke it down into 25 miles. So I'm like, okay, I just need to focus on running 2.5 miles 10 times. And then I would do that 4 times. And I just kept running through it in my head. And one of the things I speak about it in my new book, Rewire Your Mindset, but I speak about it as a whole section at my Rewire Your Mindset seminar, about when you set goals and chunking them down and breaking them down, that the biggest goal can be broken down into the smallest component part. And that's generally what you have to do when you have any big target in front of you. And one of the things I love about ultra running and ultra marathon, even though I hate the running aspect, is I love the psychology and the mindset shift that it gives you because of the way that you have to look at things. And to look at 100 miles, it seems like a crazy distance. And to be honest, to run that distance, it is quite a crazy distance. If you had told me 3 or 4 years ago that people ran 100 miles, not to mention that I would run 100 miles, I'd be like, that's fucking nuts. People can't do that. And that would have been my limiting belief beforehand. But what happens with ultra marathons, because of the great distance, you can't focus on the 100 miles. You have to focus on the 1 mile in front of you. You have to focus on the step and the 6 inches in front of your face. And you have to focus on getting the next loop done. And then you have to focus on getting the next loop done. And you just keep moving forward. I spoke about this in the Arctic podcast about when I tore my Achilles 86 kilometers from the end of the Arctic race. And I just kept putting one foot in front of the other. And that's very, very similar to any goal that you set yourself. For the person that's looking to lose 100 pounds, you don't focus on the 100 pounds. You keep the 100 pounds in mind. Yeah, I want to lose 100 pounds, but you focus on losing the first pound. Then you focus on losing the next pound, and then you focus on losing the next pound. That's how you hit any goal. You keep the end in mind. You keep the end goal of what you're trying to do in mind, but you break it down into smaller component parts. And running ultra marathons and endurance events forces you to do that, because otherwise you just have your own biggest enemy living between your two ears and you completely mind fuck yourself. And I've done that in the past. You know, I remember when I talked about this in the new book, when I ran an ultra marathon in Barcelona several months before the Arctic last 2 years ago, I remember getting 40 kilometers in, going the wrong way, getting lost, and then timing out. And I was like, fuck this race. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. This is shit. I'm not enjoying it. Fuck this. And I just went home, threw my towel in, tapped out, went home, got washed, was lying on my bed and was like, oh, Brian, you fucking idiot. I'm like, why did you quit that? I'm like, you could have finished that. I'm like, you could have kept going. And that was a massive learning curve, because that, again, as I've said in this podcast countless of times, like, the seeds of failure plant trees for future success. And that set me up for the Arctic. I'm like, I can't ever go to a race or an event or anything again with this attitude of fuck this shit. You just need to shift your mindset. Don't give yourself a plan B and just keep moving forward. And that's what I did for this 100 miles. And to be honest, the mindset angle, with the exception of the last 20 miles, I felt pretty good through this race. I had my nutritional plan dialed in beforehand, but as I mentioned, at mile 15, I took a little bit of a turn, and I had beef bars, so I used the Prime beef bars, are normally the one that I use. I normally interchange those with the Billitong bars, but the beef Prime bars tend to work better in the heat. I use the 33 shake chia seed gels. I had some Clif bars with me. And I had, what was the other nutritional thing I had with me? Oh, almond butter, like an ungodly amount of almond butter. And they're kind of my go-to foods, mostly fat-based. And what happened at mile 15, and I'm not sure if it was a combination of the heat or if it was a combination of the bars or if it was a combination of just my whole body just shutting down, but I got what happens to a lot of ultra runners, and I got a very upset stomach. I'm not going to go into graphic detail because it's probably better I don't for this podcast. As explicit as this podcast is, we're taking it down in a completely fucking different direction if I go into this description. Let's just say that I had a uncomfortable time from mile 15, and my stomach just completely turned. And I have quite a sensitive stomach anyway, but thankfully in other previous races, I've never had a problem because my nutrition's always been really good. But I think with the combination of the heat mixed in with the jet lag, because I'd only 2 days to adjust to the time zone, and maybe a food choice combination gone wrong, but I had a bad time of it from mile 15. But again, like absolutely everything, you just kind of have to suck it up and keep going. And I made the commitment coming into this race, similar to the Sahara, similar to the Arctic, that unless I had to be pulled out of there in an ambulance, I literally was finishing the race, or else I was going to time out. If I had to keep moving slowly and the 31 hours went by, I would have kept going until the 31 hours and been like, right, cool. I put in my best effort and I just wasn't good enough on the day. But a sore stomach, it did put me out for about 15-20 minutes on the side of the course. And I had to just kind of regather myself. So I made the commitment there that I was going to keep going and just not eat. And from mile 15 to about mile 40, if I'm not mistaken, I didn't eat anything. I just drank water. It was the only thing. And I could only stomach water from mile 20 on. For the first 5 miles, I couldn't even stomach the water. It was just coming back up again. And I just kept moving forward. I kept putting one foot in front of the other, focusing on the next loop, focusing on the next 2.5 miles. And then thankfully, by mile 40, my stomach started to come back round again. And I was able to eat. So I fueled my body. I kept it super simple. I just went almond butter for the next 60 miles or so and just kept fueling my body with as much almond butter as I could. It was giving me the fats I needed and I stuck with that. My stomach wasn't getting upset from it and I just kind of powered on through with that. So over the space of the next 40 miles from mile 40 to mile 80, I was actually making really good time. And looking back on my splits, so my race splits, how long it took, a 2.5 mile loop was taking me between 25 and 30 minutes. And my mile 1 and mile 50 loop were nearly the same. So I surprised myself with how well I was feeling in terms of the run. Taking out the stomach discomfort, my actual speed and training was going really well. And my body was at a very good shape at mile 50. And then for the next 30 miles from to mile 80, I was going really, really strong. My legs felt good. My energy was okay. I was starting to get a little bit tired. So I popped a caffeine pill. One of the tips that I use, or one of the tools that I use, apologies, is I don't take any caffeine for several days before a race. So Tuesday, the week before, was the last time I'd taken caffeine. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday night, I hadn't taken any caffeine, any stimulants. And then 50 miles in, I took a caffeine tablet to try and stay awake. One of the reasons I made such good time was on these kind of events, a lot of athletes will sleep. So if you're doing 100 miles, after 12, 14, 15, 16 hours, people will take a nap. Some longer than others, some will take 20 minutes, some will do an hour, some will do 2 hours, and then they'll start running after. Where I don't generally do that, I try and just power through for a couple of reasons. One, I find it mentally easier to just power through. And two, I know that caffeine has a very positive effect on me. I joked at the top of the podcast, I took a cup of coffee today and it hasn't done anything. But normally when I'm not in a jet lag state, which I suppose I was in a bit of a jet lag state, but anyways, it did work on Saturday. Caffeine hits me quite hard. I don't take caffeine late in the day because I'm such a reactor to caffeine, positive and negative. Like if I go too high and take two or three cups of coffee, like I think the fucking walls are talking about me. Like my anxiety just ramps up. So I have to kind of keep it quite dose. I have to keep quite a low dose during the day, even on regular days, but using it in these events will keep me awake. I know for a fact if I take a caffeine tablet 15, 16 hours into a race, it's going to keep me awake and I'm going to be fine. So I saved for 50 mile 50. I took my first caffeine tablet and then I took another two between mile 50 and a mile 100 over the space of the next several hours. So up until mile 80, I could see the leaderboard and there was, I think, 38 altogether. I thought it was 35 on the day. When I finished the race, they said there was 35 competitors. But when I look back on the leaderboard after, there was 38 people. And I could see the leaderboard as I was coming through. So every time you come through a 2.5 mile loop, your name will pop up on the screen. It'll tell you what position you're in. And I was in eighth. So I was in eighth from mile 50 to mile, I think, 95. Because I was making really good time between mile 50 and mile 80. Those 30 miles, I just kind of cruised straight through. But then from mile 20, as if somebody flicked a switch, everything on my body just started to shut down. And it's weird because I don't know if I've ever felt this before. And this was definitely a unique experience for this particular race where everything just went at once. And I spoke about when my Achilles tore in the Arctic. I'm like, I could feel a twinge in my Achilles for, you know, 20, 30 kilometers before it went. And then it just tore, you know, and it put me out for 3 months after I got back. But this was different. This wasn't a tear per se. This was just my body all shutting down at once. So my knee started throbbing and swole up to two or three times the size of my left knee. My hips, my ankles, my calves, everything just started to shut down. And what happens, and one of the problems of the negative compound effect when you're running incorrectly, is when you get, say, blisters on your feet, or you get a problem with your knee, or you get a problem with your hips, you start running differently. And what that does is it puts strain on different body parts that aren't used to having strain on them. And one of the reasons I think my Achilles tore in the Arctic was because I was running in snowshoes, and that affected my normal running stance and running style and running gait, meaning that my Achilles was more likely to tear, which it did. And for the last 20 miles of this race, it was just, I just had pain everywhere. I actually did take two painkillers at one stage. I took salpidine. I don't know if I'm allowed to say, yeah, I can say, fuck it, I can say what I want. It's a podcast. I'm like, yes, not normal radio. Yeah, so I took two salpidine, which is just paracetamol and codeine, because of the fucking pain trying to get through from mile 80 to mile 100 to mile 100. And my speed slowed down. And every mile from mile 80, so 81, 82, 83, 84, everything started to shut down and everything just started to stall. And I couldn't walk even at that stage, because what happens with an ultra marathon, for anyone that's never ran, you know, over 50 miles or even over a normal marathon, which would constitute an ultra marathon, is you can walk sections of an ultra marathon. And one of the strategies people would use is you'd walk up hills and then run everywhere else. And what I would normally do in this case was, my plan going out to Nevada was, I'm going to run the first 50 miles, see how my body feels. I know I can run 50 miles. And then after that, adjust accordingly. And what happened at mile 80 was, I couldn't even walk because my body was just in this kind of broken shuffle that I couldn't run at a fast speed, but I also couldn't walk because the pain was too excruciating when I walked. So I did this kind of hybrid in between, which was like a shuffle. And I did that for the last 20 miles. And it's fucking character building, because when you've ran 80 miles and you still have 20 miles left, so the better part of a marathon, you're just like, fuck this. Like, and that's where your mind is at. And I'm not going to sit here and record a podcast and be like, that's not where my mind went, because that's where it goes. Like, your mind is just like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, but you have to just not focus on that thought. You know, I spoke about on the podcast from the Arctic that every time I would feel this searing pain through my Achilles up my spine, I would just have to focus my thought elsewhere, because what you focus on is what expands. And every time my mind would go, fuck this, at mile 85 or 86, I would just flip it and go, right, come on, focus on this next 2.5 miles, focus on this next loop, focus on this next loop, focus on this next step. And you just keep doing that over and over and over and over again. And that's what happened. From mile 80 to mile 100, I ended up finishing it in 10th or 11th, I'm not even sure. And 26 and a half hours, so 26 hours and 31 minutes it took me to complete it. And it was eventful. Like, it was eventful. I have a couple of questions here that got sent in through my Instagram today that I think will tie in nicely here. And one was from Gaz's Gaelic Guide, and he said, how much mental training did you do prior to the 100 mile run? And I didn't actually do that much, because my kind of life is designed now to try and make myself mentally tougher. You know, I spoke in the new book about, you know, building mental toughness in, I think it's chapter 12, on how to build self-discipline and build mental toughness, that I get up every morning at 5 a.m. and I run every day because I don't like doing either of those things. And they're small pillars that make me mentally tougher every day. But when it came to the 100 mile race, like, nothing could have prepared me better than the Arctic. And if you haven't listened to that podcast, I would definitely check it out after this one. That is still was and still is to this day the hardest thing I've ever done. And even listening back to it now, it's one of those that you're like, fuck, I can't believe I did that. But what that does, and pushing yourself past an extreme point, what it does is it gives you an unbelievable amount of confidence. And going out of the 100 mile race, I knew I was going to complete it. I was like, as long as nothing drastically goes wrong, and shit can go wrong, I was like, as long as nothing drastically goes wrong, I'm going to be able to finish this. And there's no pain, particularly physical pain, that's going to match what happened in the Arctic. So even when my body shut down at mile 80, when my hips went, my knee swole, my ankles were killing me, my shins were fucked, I'm like, this still isn't as bad as my Achilles tearing in the Arctic. I'm like, that, I will never forget that pain, the searing pain of the last 86 kilometers running through the Arctic, where it just, every step just sent a shiver down my spine of just pulsating pain. And that set me up really well for this race, because at the end of the day, it's done in a day. Like, there was a 31-hour time limit, meaning that you had to finish it in 31 hours or you timed out. And I would, at the end of the day, as I mentioned, regardless of how difficult it was or how difficult it was going to be, it was going to be over in 31 hours. And that's something that I still apply to this day. When I'm doing business tasks, when I've got days where I've just got an incredible amount of things to do, I'm like, at the end of the day, this is all going to be done. I'm like, at the end of the day, regardless of how much this fucking sucks, it's going to be over soon. And that philosophy helps get me through. So when it came to the mental training, it's a combination of doing a little bit every day. And I've talked about this on the podcast in the past, particularly episode 198, 8 Critical Habits for Building Mental Toughness, which was one of my most downloaded episodes of 2018, that you have to just set up pillars of things that make you uncomfortable every day, because you're not going to get mentally tough overnight. You're not going to do one thing and then all of a sudden you're mentally tough and you've built this shitload of self-discipline. It's about what you do consistently over every day. It's about what you do every day. You know, tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. And because I have identified mental weakness as something that can become my default way of thinking, I've set up my life to try and work against that. It's the same as the person that's been overweight most of their life. I'm like, and now they're in shape. You build systems into your life that stop you eating too much food. You know, if you know you're going to eat 7 bars of chocolate, don't buy 7 bars of chocolate. Buy 1 bar and then eat it knowing that you're going to have it that night. You know, I know that if I don't stay on top of my mental strength, and I don't stay on top of my mental toughness by getting up early and by running and setting these challenges, I can become mentally weak. You know, I have spoken in previous podcasts, the episode on dealing with mental health, episodes on anxiety, etc., that this is my way of dealing with that. I'm like, my default disposition is to fall into that really poor mental health state of either slight environmental depression or high-end anxiety, which is the one that I've really struggled with. And this is my way around that. It makes me mentally tougher. It makes me choose my suffering. And I choose to be mentally tougher because I don't want to deal and live in a state of anxiety all the time. And that's where I was prior to signing up to endurance events. And this is my way around it. It's my way of, I suppose, self-medicating if someone's going to psychoanalyze me. But it's my way of self-medicating with choosing my suffering. I'm like, life is hard. You know, it's not easy. It never was, isn't now, never will be. But you may as well choose your suffering. I'm like, if you're someone that is overweight, or you're someone that deals with anxiety, or you're someone that's got environmental depression because your life is set up in a shit way, it's like, all right, cool. You can choose that to be your suffering, or you can choose an alternative path. You can choose to set up an environment so that you feel better. You can choose to focus your energy and attention into setting these challenges for yourself so that you're not living in the state of self-imposed anxiety. Or you can choose to make better food choices or find a training program that works for you so that you're not overweight. I'm like, you can choose your suffering, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and lecture people on, you know, you should do this, that, or the other. All I'm saying is that life is difficult and you're going to get suffering, that you may as well fucking choose which one you're going to. And as someone that's reaped the benefits out the other side, who thankfully, touch wood, doesn't suffer from those mental health issues much anymore, because I've found either strategies that help me deal with it and setting challenges and focusing on things that make me mentally tougher and mentally stronger, make me better equipped to deal with it. You know, I always tell people mental health, from someone that's experienced it, is a lot like sweeping the floor. I'm like, you can sweep the floor today and all your problems and it'll be clean, it'll go away. But if you don't do it every day, your floor is going to get dirty again. I'm like, your mental health is the same. I'm like, you can do a run today, or you can do a training session today, or you can do this thing today. But if you don't do it continuously and consistently over time, those problems are going to come back. So that's something I try and stay on top of. And as a result of that, it helps with my mental training, and definitely helped me with my mental training for this 100-mile run. The next question then came in from Apex Nutrition. Did you wear headphones when running? I used headphones about 20 miles into the run. So one of the things that I try and do, I did this in the Sahara, I did this in the Arctic, and I did it for the 100-mile race, was I try and use caffeine and music as tools in my arsenal. Now, ironically, I actually didn't use music at all on this race. I listened to podcasts. So what I did after mile 20 was I had 7 or 8 podcasts download from Cameron Haynes and Joe Rogan, and I downloaded a couple of the Football Weekly podcasts, which is a podcast I listen to around the Premier League, and I listened to those. So I listened to about 18 hours of podcasts. And the reason I listened to the Premier League one was, one, it's one of my favorite podcasts, the Football Weekly, the Guardians Football Weekly podcast, but also the, and that's my like downtime disconnect escapism podcast. I listen to 95% of podcasts are all informational based or things that help me. And then I've got 5% of ones that are just kind of like numbing out, monging out, listening to the Premier League. So I used that initially. And then I started listening to the episodes with Cameron Haynes. For those of you unfamiliar with Cameron Haynes, he is an ultramarathon runner based in the States. He's also a bow hunter, but it's his ultramarathon running that I really connect with, because he runs 200-mile races, and I think he ran the Moab 240 recently, which is a 240-mile race, which is fucking crazy. And listening to those podcasts and hearing his training, hearing him talk about the events that were of a greater distance to what I was doing, made the relative 100 miles seem shorter to me. And that's something that I, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, I implore people to do. And I get that a lot from my social media, where people will see me running 100 miles and go, fuck, if you can run 100 miles, I can run a half marathon. And I love hearing that. I love getting that inspiration back, because all it's doing is it's relative. Your goals and what you're running and what you're doing and what you set for yourself is all 100% relative. And my 100 miles is an ungodly amount to somebody else, but to a Cameron Haynes or someone that runs 240 miles, it's not that much. And that makes me feel like it's not as big of a task, because what I've done in the past is I've put goals on pedestals, and I've put things like bodybuilding shows and marathons. You know, I spoke about those in the Rewire Your Mindset book. Those were two, a general 26.2 mile marathon and bodybuilding shows. They were two events and goals that I put on pedestals, meaning that my philosophy towards those were they would be cool to do, but they're something that other people do. And that was my default. That I never questioned that limiting belief. I never thought about it. It was just something that other people did. And knowing that that's something that I can do, I'm not sure why I do that, and it's something that I still do if I'm not conscious of it. I try and make the goal I've set for myself seem less daunting by using people who would find that normal, meaning that a Cam Haynes or a Cameron Haynes who runs 240 miles will do 100 miles just because he's training for a 240 mile race, and that makes it seem easier in my mind. And again, I'm not sure how much that resonates with people, but that's something that I use and a tool that I use. So I listened to those, and I did use the headphones for the majority of the race because that's something that helped me. Next one came in from Kay Graham. Did you run nonstop to complete the 100 miles? Yes, more or less. So every 25 miles, I took a 15-minute break to eat. That was the plan. And I stuck with that more or less. I adjusted it slightly because I got sick at mile 15. I didn't take the full 15 minutes. I only took about 5 minutes at mile 25. But the goal and the plan all along would have been, was, and I stuck to it for, you know, 75% of the time, was to take a 15-minute rest, to just compose myself, to refuel, to eat every 25 miles. But then apart from that, yeah, I ran the whole thing. There was a slight up incline, an uphill, and then as I got from mile 50 to mile 100, I started to walk that incline and then run the rest of the 2.2 miles. But outside of that, I just kept running. And my body held up. As I said, until mile 80, when I got this weird kind of shuffle run, I ran the whole thing apart from that. Next one from LMV008. Have you fallen out of love with training now that you've hit your goal and you're exhausted? No, not necessarily. So one, I'm not exhausted. I feel quite well, with the exception of the jet lag. My body's in pretty good condition, so I would say I'm far from exhausted. And no, I haven't fallen out of love with training. And what normally happens here, and this took me several years to figure out, was I normally only lose motivation and fall out of love with training when I'm not aware of what my next goal is. And I always go into every single event with an idea of what my next goal is going to be. And I started this because in 2015, when I came eighth in the Fitness Model World Championships in Las Vegas, funnily enough, that was the first time that I had no goal set on the back end of a show. And I did the Fitness Model show, did really well in this. The goal was to come top 10. I came eighth. And I finished that show and I had no goals set outside of that. No business goal, no fitness goal. And I got that little bit of mild depression that you get after being so focused and tunnel visioned on one particular goal that you hit it and overcome it and achieve it, that you feel lost when you come out the other side. And that's only ever happened to me to that extreme once, because I learned from my mistake quite quickly. And every time now I set an event for myself, whether it's a marathon, whether it's an ultra marathon, whether it's an endurance event, whether it's a this, that, or the other, I always have another goal out the other side. So when I finished Marathon de Saab, when I finished the six back-to-back marathons in the Sahara in 2018, I'd always planned on putting a heavy focus on my family on the back of that. I knew that I was going to take a little bit of time to recover physically. So I put a huge focus. I went on holidays with my family. I spent a lot more time with my inner circle, my friends, people that I couldn't meet in the lead up because of the amount of training I was doing. So I had shifted focus and shifted goals. It was away from fitness, but it was in another area of my life that was important to me. When I finished the Arctic last year, when I ran through the Arctic, 230 kilometers through the Arctic, I had always planned on finishing the latest book, Rewire Your Mindset. So as soon as that was over, like literally the day I got home, I started writing the final draft of that book. And that kept my mind focused. It wasn't training related, but it kept my mind focused. What I do with training then is I always do complementary programs off the back of an endurance event, meaning that I'm fortunate in the sense that I hate running. So taking a break from running isn't an issue for me. I know a lot of runners and ultra runners get depressed at the end of events because they're like, oh, I need to take a break on running. And I'm like, yes, no fucking running, fuck running. And so that just means that I get to do weight training. So right now, for the next 3-4 weeks, I'm going to do more strength and hypertrophy based work because that's what's going to support me now. It gives my body a little bit of a break from the amount of endurance, but it hits me in a different training stimulus is something that I enjoy. I did the same thing after the Sahara, and I did the same thing to a degree after the Arctic. Even though I couldn't train properly for 3 months after the Arctic because my Achilles tore, I was still able to do upper body work. So I was doing back, chest, arms, shoulders, etc. Just a lot of it was bench supported for the first couple of months. So I don't fall out of love with training. What I generally find, people who set a goal and fall out of love with training or feel demotivated, it's normally down to a lack of another goal that they're working towards. So every single time I go into an event, I always have the next one in mind. Which brings me on to my last question, which came in 7 or 8 different versions, and that's, what's next? This hasn't been announced anywhere else because I recorded a podcast with Marty Guilfoyle ahead of Wellfest. I'm at Wellfest this year on the 9th or 10th of May, whenever Wellfest is. I'm at Wellfest one of the days, and I was recording a podcast with Marty Guilfoyle before to kind of promote it. And we spoke about this, but it hasn't been released yet. And that is my next event, which is in the Himalayas. So I am running in November in the Himalayas. So I'm running at the bottom of, in Nepal, I'm running at the bottom of some mountain, I haven't a fucking clue where it is, but we're running to Everest Base Camp, meaning that it's 170 kilometers over 5 days running at altitude to Everest Base Camp. So people normally do Everest Base Camp, and I'm not even sure how many days it is, but we're doing it in about a third of the time, and we're going to run it. So myself and Simon, who ran the Arctic with me, who ran Marathon de Saab with me, the two of us are going over to Nepal in November, and we are running 170 kilometers at altitude to Everest Base Camp. For anyone that's unfamiliar with the altitude, it's about 6,000 meters, which means that it's going effectively straight up. Everest is 8,000 meters for context. And that's going to be the next event. So over the next few months, I'm going to give myself a little bit of a break in terms of running, just get my body recover. I might do Ironman at some stage in between just to give me a little bit of focus between now and November. But 80% of my priority in training is going to be building up my body to run at altitude. And the reason I picked this event in particular, or this run in particular, was because I've done the heat in the Sahara, I've done the cold in the Arctic, and I was like, oh, the next logical step is altitude. So I want to see how my body will respond at that level of altitude and just see how it goes. So as I said, the next month, is going to be mostly hypertrophy and strength-based work. And then probably from April 1st or so, I'll start gearing things towards the Himalayan race in, or the Himalayan run in November. And I might do an Ironman triathlon in between, if it just, my schedule allows me to do it. So again, coming back to the last question, I always have the next goal in mind before I sign up to anything. And then when I come back from the Himalayas, it's going to be setting up for Kilimanjaro. So I'm bringing a gang up Kilimanjaro with Earth's Edge in February 2021. So for those of you who have signed up to that, I'm really looking forward to that too. So that'll be the next thing. And then before I go up Kilimanjaro, I'll have the next thing set. And again, that's one of the ways that I stay motivated and gives me something to train for. And I've mentioned this countless times on the podcast, and as a final call to action on today's podcast, is if you don't have a goal, set a goal. Like, as someone that's been training nearly 18 years, training seriously for the last 11 years, I still have to set goals, or else I won't train. You know, I also won't diet properly because it's too difficult. Like, it's too easy to go through the motions in the gym. It's too easy to just eat what you want unless you're working towards a goal. So if you don't have a goal that you're working towards right now, set one. You know, to look great at an event, to run a 5K, to do a triathlon, to fit into a certain dress that you want, to fit into a pair of jeans that you want, to get set yourself up for, you know, to look amazing at Wellfest or the Galway races or some event in Dublin or the UK or London or Sydney or wherever you're listening to this, set a goal for yourself, because if you're not working towards a goal, it's very difficult to stay motivated full stop. So that's everything on today's episode. As you may have noticed, I'm talking through the event, and I did get some mindset lessons from this, but to be honest, not as many as I got from the Sahara and the Arctic. And if you haven't listened to my podcast on 10 life lessons I learned running through the Sahara and the Arctic, I would definitely listen to that one. That one is very heavy on the mindset side. This is kind of just one more brick on top of that, because of those lessons that I learned there supported me for this event. And I got through it. I didn't die. I finished it, survived, got to do some awesome things with my family, got to bring Holly to amusement parks and all over Vegas, which is deadly. So that's everything today's episode. Hopefully you enjoyed. If you did, as always, be sure to hit me up on Instagram. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe. Or if you are subscribed, please leave a review for how you're finding it wherever you listen to podcasts. I'll catch you all next week.